Good morning. Welcome to this Friday morning. Very nice to have you with us on the 15th of December. And, oh my goodness, great John Williams music. Star Wars The Last Jedi opened last night. Scores of people lined up for hours and hours to be the first to see this motion picture. And then the rest of us can see it, like, tomorrow with nobody in a theater. Well, it'll be very nice. All good stuff. John Williams is the soundtrack for the new movie. We'll be hearing music from Star Wars The Last Jedi throughout the morning this morning. Good
Great.
Morning, everyone. Welcome, and thank you for joining us on this Friday. Let me introduce our panel to you. We have a terrific lineup here. Rich Honan is with us. We always love when Rich is with us. He's a corporate attorney. He is a dear friend of ours, and we are honored when he graces us with his presence. That only takes, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks of begging. And we got him back, and good morning. How are you?
And then 2 or 3 weeks of your listeners begging for me not to return.
That's so not it's true. That's not true.
Nice to be here. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for asking. Aaron Pasidi is here. He is a professor at Siena College, where he teaches economics, and he knows the tax plan like nobody else, and we are thrilled to have him with us. Good morning, sir.
I don't think anybody knows the tax plan, but thank you.
No. You probably read more about it than most of the people who voted on it.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's for sure.
They're not getting it.
All 3,000 pages.
Yeah, they'll get it tonight. Judith Enck is with us. She is a former Environmental Protection Agency administrator. She is our dear friend, and she joins us each and every Friday. Check your watches. It's Friday. She's here. Good morning. How
Happy
are you?
Friday. I'm
Happy
great.
Friday
Thank
to you.
You.
Alan Chartok joins us from Parts Unknown. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm in a part unknown, but I have to tell you, I was a little bit afraid when you just said, Judith Enck is with us. Check your watches. In other words, did she grab our watches from us?
No, it's not like a magic trick or anything. No, is that what you meant? Like,
am
like,
I a thief?
Yeah.
Like, wow. Sort of raising like money watches, for clean air.
You put it into the top hat, you know, and then you hit it with a hammer, and then it comes out. And
you meant check your calendar because I'm here on Friday.
I know what you said, Joe. You said Judith Enck is here with us. Check your watches.
See, I actually check my watch because I have the little thing that says F15.
Got it.
But it tells me Friday, so that's
so old school a watch.
Yeah, very much. Very swatchy of me. Okay, well, good morning. Welcome. It's a delight to have you all with us. We have a lot to talk about. And all I really want to talk about is Star Wars, but we won't start there. In fact, we won't even...
But that was the original... Wasn't that the original music they were playing?
Well, they all used
right? Was that the original?
Okay. But it's from this movie. That's the standard opening music. This is from the new soundtrack, the music we're playing this morning. Okay, let us go to what is making news this morning. We have a tax bill update, and the Republican tax bill faces new uncertainty ahead of an expected vote. House and Senate Republicans faced a new round of uncertainty Thursday about the fate of their $1.5 trillion tax bill with the possible defection of Marco Rubio, a Republican senator of Florida, amid continuing questions about how the bill will be paid for and how much of the benefits will flow to low- and middle-income people versus corporations. Republicans who reached agreement Wednesday on a merged version of the House and Senate tax plans expect to unveil the final bill today and vote on the legislation early next week so that it can be sent to President Trump before Christmas. But those plans were thrown into some disarray on Thursday when Mr. Rubio said he would vote no on the bill unless it included a greater expansion of the child tax credit, which he and other Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah have been pushing for to benefit lower-income individuals. So here's my question. Why is this sudden for Marco Rubio to come up with this instead of...
I think he's been talking about this for a while. I just think now he's becoming a lot more forceful about it.
I think they already gave on part of it, too, and he just keeps asking for more.
This
is the refundable tax credit. I guess you really can't do air quotes on the radio and have it
no,
be,
but you
be,
said it with such derision in your voice that you actually pulled it
because it's not
it
a tax
off.
Credit. A refundable tax credit means let's give money to people who are not paying taxes. It's an entitlement. That's what it is, which is fine if that's what you want to do, but it has nothing to do with taxes.
Rubio's an odd bird. He's going to vote for this because it's good for wealthy people in Florida. Now, remember, he has been advocating, I think, a good policy position, but I would never count on him to stay strong on this.
How is it good for wealthy people in Florida?
It's good for wealthy people everywhere who will be paying less taxes, who their companies that they work for will have, you know, much better treatment in terms of changing the tax rate. I'm not saying it's just Florida. I think it's everywhere.
Yeah. Is it possible that it also might be that Florida has a lot of children in it and that he's just doing the right thing?
No.
If you trace the money trail behind Rubio, that leads back to the Koch brothers and, you know, the handful of very wealthy donors. So
yeah, but he's still got to get elected.
I mean, if you're going to criticize one thing about the tax bill, it seems like the child tax credit is a very peculiar and bizarre thing to focus in on and, you know, threaten to withhold a yes vote.
And
on
not
that.
Only Rubio, also Lee, Senator Lee.
Which also makes zero sense from somebody who thinks they have Tea Party cred, and they're trying to give out more entitlements. I don't get it.
It's Marco Rubio. I think Rubio is kind of a distraction. I think they are really worried about not having the votes. They can only lose three votes, and Corker is still a no. Flake has concerns, and wasn't it Flake who had that amazing interaction with the gentleman on the airplane who really pounded him on potentially losing health care? His name is Addy Barkan, A-D-Y-B-A-R-K-A-N. If you've not seen his presentation on why the tax bill is bad for health care and for him personally, it's definitely worth watching. And then, sadly, you've got John McCain, very ill in the hospital, and also another senator, is it Thatcher?
Yeah, someone else is having surgery.
Thad
Cochran of Mississippi.
And Susan Collins, I think, is concerned about the elimination of the mandate.
I keep taking the IOU.
She's going to give.
I keep on hearing the back and forth, and this is actually, I was going to say this when you said that, she keeps asking for things and they keep on giving and then ask for more. And she seems to be doing that as well.
Yeah. Well, but Doug Jones, you know, she showed her hand when she said, no, we don't have to seat him. You know, that was very disappointing. Don't you think? Especially since McCain.
Yeah.
Especially since, the Senate leadership had always said, you have to do that when the shoe was on the other foot. No, I think she's in the tank.
Yeah, I think you're right, Alan. I think we've got basically the next 48 hours are really crucial. They've already told Vice President Pence to cancel his trip to the Middle East because they think they're going to need his vote. And once the dam breaks, I think you're going to have a lot of people voting against it. But the question is, how do you get the additional vote or two that you need? And I really think the fate of this bill also is very influenced by the Roy Moore, Doug Jones election. Because so many Republicans now, I think, may be more emboldened to stand up.
And feel vulnerable.
And back to Rubio, there's one other possibility here that he's been sitting on this ever since, a certain person named him, Little Marco. You never know.
Yeah, no love lost there.
There's no way he stands up to Trump. If Trump marches down to his office and says vote this way,
I think we have consensus that we're not counting on Marco Rubio to say no.
But this could be a very strategic play on his part because the tax plan is very unpopular with most of the public. I think 75% of the people think they're not going to see any benefit. Yeah. They don't like it. So if he's stands opposed to it and has presidential ambitions again in 2020, he can point to this as saying, listen, we like tax cuts, but this is not the right tax cut.
Until February. Until February, when everybody who currently does not itemize and takes a standard deduction, when they're withholding changes in February and they start realizing, wow, I'm getting a lot more money back. I'm taking more money home because in February is when the IRS is going to change the withholding based on what we think are the new, the 12 to 24 grand. And then everybody's going to be looking at Marco and saying, why'd you hold this up? And I think there's going to be a huge backlash then when people start saying, wow, I really did save money. What were the Democrats talking about?
But you could say that about all the other stuff that's going to come down the road as the result of
state and local taxes,
the health care, anything else. of what impact.
You know for a fact that
not to mention your internet bill, but that's another story.
Next segment. Boom, boom.
No, wait. You know for a fact, Aaron, what were the numbers? There was something like 70-some-odd percent of most Americans don't itemize. Okay,
right.
they take the standard deduction, and that number is going up to 94% under this bill. And that deduction, no matter what else you look at, that deduction I think is doubling, right?
Yeah.
The standard deduction, and so a huge amount of people are going to be getting big money back, and they're going to look around and say, "What were we arguing about?" And that's when I think Marco Rubio is going to get in trouble.
Where did you get this big money back? We had this out. We duked this out yesterday on the air. We're talking about pennies for most people.
$12,000 a year is pennies for most people.
It's not $12,000 for everybody.
It kind of is.
It lowers your gross income by an extra $12,000.
Does anybody remember? I'm sorry, but do you remember when the Reagan? I'm really dating myself. When the Reagan tax cuts went into effect, I remember I was taking home something like $248 a week or every 2 weeks or something. I was a lawyer actually, making $18,000 a year, and my take home went up from like $248 to something like
I was making $100 a week at Environmental Advocates. I'm not making
this
that
is,
up
right.
But continue.
Yeah.
Nobody didn't think you were making that up, by the way. Go ahead.
But I remember, I went from something like $248 to like $275 or something, and that was a big difference,
your life.
It sure did. Yeah. Anyway,
I mean, what's being lost in this is that at least up until 2025, households are going to see a tax cut. Their after-tax income will go up. That's not that's geared towards very high earners in terms of the personal income tax. That's geared towards corporations. So that's not in dispute. The question is what happens after that. And when you have the initial discussions right now talking about, well, we're going to blow up the deficit, so now it's time to start thinking about cutting government services, that whatever income gains you see from the tax cut can either be totally eliminated or actually result in income loss if, Medicaid, Medicare benefits go down, Social Security benefits go down, food stamps provision goes down.
But even if they don't get to that, there are provisions in this tax bill that – it's correct. Average middle-class Americans will see a cut, but people manage their financial lives by their checkbook or they're on the computer now, and they're going to see impacts on health care, if you can write off your college loans and state and local tax cut. And so when you add that to the mix, it may not be
and
as
again,
generous.
And by the way, right? Now 94% of people who are going to be taking this standard deduction. And Aaron, you just said it's not in dispute. I think that it's heavily in dispute right now I think the Democrats are saying most people are not, it's not a tax cut. It's a tax cut for the rich.
Let me go to Alan.
That's not the case.
Yeah. Oh, Alan, go ahead.
Well, a couple of things that I'd love some discussion on. Did I read this morning that there's an abortion provision in this bill? Did anybody see that?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, Joe's going to look at it up for a minute.
I am going to look that up.
On his magic machine, number one. And number two, I want to make sure that everybody understands that the American people hate this tax bill. And they think that they're getting screwed and that the very rich are getting richer, and that's not going to change. So
it will in February, Alan.
No, it won't.
Okay.
No, it won't. No, because what's going to happen
is... Don't confuse you with the facts.
Yeah, right. But and look who's talking. So, but there's no question to me, the American people don't like it. They understand it. They understand that this is a big, massive giveaway to the rich, and they're going to keep on thinking that.
Aaron, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, so I'm actually going to disagree with Alan on this one, because the Koch brothers sent out hundreds of thousands of door knockers. I believe it was primarily in Florida. I believe they were primarily high school students who were doing this. And most people that they interviewed said, we just don't care, or this is too complicated for us to be interested in.
So the polls are wrong.
I'm not saying the polls are wrong. I'm just saying that, people can say whatever they want. That doesn't necessarily mean it's true. So people might be against it because it's, heavily geared toward the wealthy. But I think the bottom line is, a lot of people don't understand it. I don't understand all the nuances. The National Association of Manufacturers, Chambers of Commerce don't understand the nuances. All of these lobbying groups are starting to say, well, if this goes through, there's going to be all of these unintended consequences on our business. We really should be thinking this out a little more clearly.
Well, they haven't. I think that's the problem. The process is so bad. It's not transparent. The members of Congress get the bill tonight. They're expected to vote next week. Little snippets are coming out. For instance, I think in the conference bill, they're still going to have drilling in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. Mm-hmm.
To your point, though, that the next 48 hours are crucial. As more information comes out,
right.
And to Aaron's point as well, as more people see this and more people understand what's going on, and I think you both mentioned what the results of Tuesday's election show vulnerabilities of will that open the door to a bit of a sea change?
Can they get Jones seated quickly?
No.
I was really kind of hoping he would come in and vote this down.
Senator Schumer has called on the Senate majority not voting on this until Jones is seated, and Mitch McConnell is very adamant in saying they're not going to seat Jones until January.
But if they don't have the votes, and you're waiting for, if you're waiting for McCain, and you're waiting for Cochran, and you're waiting for,
then it may be delayed.
Then it may be delayed.
I mean, this may come down to, like, sadly, two very ill senators. If they can't come to the floor to vote, this may be pushed into January, and then I think it's dead in January once Jones is seated. But McConnell's not doing what they did for Scott Brown. They're not allowing Doug Jones to be seated, which is, I think, one reason why Roy Moore, I mean, there's a bunch of reasons why Roy Moore is not conceding. One would be to have just a little bit of legitimacy to say we don't want Doug Jones seated.
We do have to take a break. We'll be right back. We'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, Aaron Pasitti, and Rich Honan, right after this. Barbara writes and said, I just air conducted my way through your intro music. Turned out to be quite a spontaneous workout. May the force be with all of you this holiday season. Barbara, thank you very much. Listening to music this morning from the new Star Wars The Last Jedi soundtrack from the amazing John Williams, who is just second to none. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we have letters right here. Let me read a couple of them. Jen says, I've heard recently that if the U.S. does not return to eco-friendly progress, our credit rating will be lowered. What would that do to the overall economics of the United States? Also, I'm interested in hearing the panel's opinions on the sustainability of alternative energy jobs and training programs for workers of unsustainable jobs such as oil and coal. So let's start with the credit rating.
So Moody's about 2 weeks ago said that local governments that are vulnerable to the impacts of climate change, which is a lot, may have their ratings downgraded. You just have to look at, hurricanes and flooding. And it is a very big economic risk for local governments.
Because credit ratings are primarily determined by lenders' the ability of the borrower to repay.
Right. Yeah.
So if, these...
Like Puerto Rico is not going to be able to repay.
Right. So in these vulnerable areas, if it gets hammered, your tax base gets destroyed. You don't have any, money to service your bond payments. And that's going to raise borrowing costs for local municipalities. And then you get that downward circle where it's more expensive for them to borrow. So they can't invest in the things that would prevent climate change, which makes the risk of that happening, or if it happens, the risk of being able to repay even greater, which raises interest rates further, and it's ugly.
Yeah, the Trump administration may not recognize climate change as a real risk, but Moody's does.
And real quick, because we have a lot of letters here, but the second part of this about the opinion on the sustainability of alternative energy jobs and training programs for workers of unsustainable jobs in oil and coal.
Well, coal is dead. The number of jobs is way, way down, and the number of jobs in solar and wind is way, way up. Unfortunately, this tax bill actually reduces tax credits for people who want to buy solar, who want to buy electric cars. So this tax bill, I think, will be a little bit of a bump, but I think we'll see continued growth in the clean energy field.
We got this letter from Jeremy, who says, is the current child care proposal 1,100 or 1,600? Rubio wants 2,000. Are there still seven brackets?
It's still seven brackets, I thought.
Yeah, and I think the child care tax credit is 1,100 or 1,600?
I thought they had already moved from 11 to 16.
That's right. They moved from 11 to 16.
Yeah. And now he's, I don't know
now
if he's looking for more.
2,000, I think is what he's
looking
for.
He's looking for more tax credits for lower income families.
Well, that's the, through the child tax credit. Yeah.
Alan, this one's for you. How might donations to WAMC or any other nonprofit be affected if people are not itemizing anymore? Will the government pick up the slack if people stop donating to the Red Cross and other nonprofits?
The answer, of course, is no. You know, WAMC will be in trouble, just like everybody else, PBS and everybody else. So the real question is this: if only a few percentages of the people will be taking a deduction for that, the people at the very top will be still taking deductions for charitable groups. So people who have a little bit more will. But anybody who's giving you $100 and who's been deducting that, they're not going to get that anymore. And we don't know how much that counts. I mean, how much does it, is it going to count that your public radio station, which is totally dependent on you, no other, you know, a tiny bit of money from the federal government will prosper if you're not there for them. So we don't really know the answer to the question, because we don't know how much if somebody who gives you $100 thinks it's important that they get that deduction. Right? Yeah. Am I missing something?
You're right. And they may give 50 rather than 100. I mean, you guys will chart it next year, and it'll be something to watch.
Yeah.
Janice says, you keep talking about the double standard deduction. Aren't they also removing the personal tax credit for a family of four? I think that's a wash, isn't it?
I think what they're doing is they're like you'll lose your exemptions or something like that. But I still think. And this is based all on second source material. Like, I haven't read the bill.
No one has.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, but you hate talking about something you haven't actually read as the primary source. But I think that if you did not itemize before, even though that exemption is going to go down, I think you still end up net, you know, with a net positive lower tax bill.
Well, you know, Kate wrote us a letter. She's a CPA of a great note. Good morning, panel. I have to disagree with Aaron here this AM. I am a CPA and have prepared more tax returns than I can count. So if, capital letters,
that sounds kind of counterintuitive to me, but keep going.
So, well, it's
more
than
I can count.
So if we get a double standard deduction, okay, that's good for many. However, in capital letters, if you have at least two kids, and especially if you have more children, you will not benefit at all, since you are losing personal exemptions at $4K each. Next, you are not going to be able to deduct above the line the student loan interest. Mm-hmm. Charitable deductions are going away. The lowest rate is 10 to 12% a tax increase in capital letters. The bill stinks. I have more to say, but Alan has it covered. Thanks, Alan. And from Kate, that's why I wanted to read that letter.
I think Kate should run for office.
We got this letter from Kathleen, who says, as someone with low income, the idea that my withholding would change and I'd get $20 more a week, I have to say that although the rich will get a lot more, $80 a month would be a life changer for me, which was one of the things that Chris Churchill was bringing up during our conversation yesterday. Juan says we shouldn't fall back on class distinctions as the first argument against the tax bill. It is bad because, first and foremost, it benefits corporations above real people. We need to repeal Citizens United. Mm-hmm. And that is from Juan.
I thought corporations were people at this stage in the game.
Exactly.
Rich?
Well, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, legally, yes.
Tongue in tongue.
Anyways, point
tongue
taken.
Tongue in cheek, yes.
Sarcasm.
Some people don't get sarcasm, so you have to be very, very careful.
Very, very, very specific, yes. So the question being, the president, by the way, we're looking at the monitor here, the president saying as he's getting on some air plane for air.
Yeah, that
helicopter. I don't know, the helicopter thing. I think we will pass the tax plan early next week. So that's,
Joe, they always say that.
No,
they
I know. What else are you going
to
say?
Healthcare bill, they want the herd to go along. Yeah. So they think if they lie and they say we have the votes and we're going to do it and it's in the bag, but we know differently. We've already laid it out. You got McCain. You got the other senator. You got Collins. You got Rubio. You got a lot of people who are having second thoughts about all of this. So when they say we've got it in the bag, you know what that's all about.
This definitely feels like it's in trouble. And whenever they announce an agreement in principle, that's always a bad sign. And they announced that this week. But I think if, you know, the public really engages and finds their members of Congress over the weekend, this could go off the rails next week. And then they're in big trouble once they Luther Strange has left.
Yeah, they're against the clock here.
Yeah.
And that's why you were right, Judith, about I think it was you, about the Alabama situation, because they're taking a look at this and they're all going, uh-oh.
Right. I think they were going along because, well, for a whole bunch of reasons, but including they were nervous about not pleasing the president, who desperately needs a congressional win. And when in the state of Alabama, if you have a Democrat win, and, you know, the president really went all in for Roy Moore in the final days, that wacky rally nearby in Florida, and then
he did robocalls.
Did you hear the robocall? It kind of sounded like an angry old guy calling.
Yes. I need Roy Moore.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So I think that political threat that existed even a few weeks ago is not there anymore. So maybe they can do the amazing thing of voting their conscience.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will move on to other issues. And we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Oh, we got Rich dancing. Good job, Rob. Nice job. Canto Bight, it is from the new Star Wars soundtrack by our good friend John Williams. Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Alan Chartok is here, Judith Eng, Aaron Pasitti, and Rich Honan. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let us move on to, you know, there are other things to talk about, so we will do just that and talk about some other things other than the tax bill. The other big news from yesterday, of course, was net neutrality. Boy, you know, the more I read about this, it's just the one thing I found interesting about net neutrality is the various ways that news outlets decided how they were going to explain it to people. Mm-hmm. I heard about highways. I heard about lanes. I heard about the ocean versus a lake versus a pond. It's really quite interesting of the various ways that this was used to describe what net neutrality is. But federal regulators voted Thursday to allow internet providers to speed up services for websites that they favor and block or slow down others in a decision repealing Obama-era regulations overseeing broadband companies such as AT&T and Verizon. The move by the FCC to deregulate the telecom and cable industries was a prominent example of the policy shifts taking place in Washington under President Trump, a major setback for consumer groups, tech companies, and Democrats who had lobbied heavily against the decision. I have a question, though, about this when they talk about consumer groups and the people who are against this. Why are Internet businesses and the Internet those who partake in the internet economy not screaming and yelling about this?
Because half of them are making money from it and half of them won't be, right? So the if you're an ISP, you could be making money mm-hmm. because now you could go to Netflix and say, hey, you take up on a given day 70% of the internet usage in America. We're gonna charge you more. I don't know that, I'll defer to Aaron on this. I don't know that without respect to the rules on net neutrality, which is a great term, by the way, because it's one of those mm-hmm. great terms that, you know, it's hard to fight against.
But it's now dead.
I don't think that's true. I actually think, though, for example, did it make sense that Netflix pays the same amount of money as anybody else to stream their service when they're taking some huge portion of the internet? I'm not sure that's fair.
Well, if Netflix has additional cost, you and I, as someone who watches Netflix, will now pay more to watch Netflix.
More as I'm paying to Time Warner or Spectrum or whoever it is, right, for my internet
service.
Well,
that's a point, because those are all monopolies pretty much, that you have to go in and you mm-hmm. pay to an individual company to have, quote, free and open access to the internet. Now, you're going to be paying a little bit more for this one, and there's going to be side deals where you can't get it on this plan, but if you do, it's right. going to be slower and it's going mm-hmm. to be difficult to get to, or you'll have to pay a little bit more piecemeal to get what you want.
It was only 3 years ago that the FCC established yeah. net neutrality, and the goal is that this is a public resource. You should not have to pay more to get faster service. I mean, I think, Joe, you talked about the descriptions of what this is. It really is, are you going to go on the pay road, or are you going to pay a big toll? Like, are you going to drive to New York City on the thruway and pay a toll, or are you going to drive to New York City on Route 9W? And there's a big difference.
The other way I heard it described, too, is the actual the quickness, too, that one person can be in a lane going 65 mm-hmm. and another person can be in a lane going 35.
But isn't that now?
You're still getting to the same direction.
FCC rules were to prevent that.
The FCC rules were meant to have the internet providers be regulated as common carriers, which, by the way, as everybody knows, Tom Wheeler, Obama's pick for FCC, was vehemently against it. He came from industry. He came and he was a lobbyist and came from industry, and he tried to promulgate rules that would not result in Congress in basically calling these carriers common carriers. And a court ruling came out early in his tenure, and he was trying real hard to get around it. And then Obama said, "No, this is what we're going to do." I mean, that's a well-known pivot. And, you know, the rules went into effect, and now they're not.
But in terms of the speed of this, broadband's largely a public good, meaning, you know, your consumption of a Netflix movie doesn't diminish my ability to watch a Netflix movie. So all that's going to change is how much you pay for the privilege of being able to watch Netflix movies. It's not going to necessarily be faster or slower. It's a matter of how much you're going to pay.
Yeah, and I thought that at least under my plan, you can't get like the ultra fast internet now, and you know, you pay the extra money.
If you pay more, sure, yeah. and the worry is to keep having fast access, you're going to be paying more and more and more.
Well, if I'm going to stream movies and that's what I decide mm-hmm. to do, I have to pay more to do that. I don't think that means the end of Western civilization.
It's not just watching movies. It's the backbone of many small businesses. Students rely on this. Hospitals rely on this. It's in this day and age, this is not a luxury.
This is a huge part of our economy, and it's. I just want to read a statement from AT&T. I thought this was interesting. It said the internet will continue to work tomorrow just as it always has. I'm not worried about tomorrow. I'm worried about like 2-3 weeks. Yeah. You know, it'll take them a while to work up to be really devious.
But that's not even the evil that the opponents are worried about. It's not so much that, you know, I'm going to pay for faster, or, you know, somebody's going to get slower. It's more that if Time Warner, I keep calling it Time Warner or Spectrum, if, you know, Time Warner goes out and buys Yahoo or something, I'll only be able to use Yahoo.
That's right. Right.
You know, or pay to use Google.
Right. And what I started, what I said I was going to ask you, Aaron, about, I feel like even without net neutrality rules, that's going to violate some kind of either antitrust rules or Robinson-Patman or Price. You
but
know,
this
any
Department
of
Justice will not step
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
Sure, but you don't need to because you have a private right of action under those, and you're going to get the Googles of the world suing you.
Well,
and
you're
I don't think
a
you
corporate
want that.
Lawyer. You will facilitate that. But if you're if you don't have access to legal resources or lots of money to get faster service, you're just going to be sitting there with really slow service
unless you're
you
one
can
of
pay
the
more.
200 million people who's part of a class action that gets started by those corporate lawyers.
So
ain't going to happen. Hey, Joe, I just like to come back to one thing, if I can, to interrupt the discussion on this. We're getting a ton of mail on the right on the abortion question. And if I could just read this, and then I'll go away. Buried on page 93 of the 429-page tax proposal is a provision that would allow fetuses to be named as beneficiaries of college savings accounts known as 529 plans, investment vehicles that come to a range of tax breaks. Abortion rights advocates were quick to call out the language. This is a backdoor attempt to establish personhood from the moment of conception, represented Deanna DeGetty of Colorado, co-chair of the Congressional Pro-Choice Caucus, said that the tax code is no place to define what constitutes an unborn child. What's next, giving a Social Security number to a zygote?
But they took that out of the tax. They took that out of the House plan. The Senate was not part of their plan, and it is not a part of this current plan, from my understanding. It was a part of the original House bill. And then when this started to be noticed, was taken out.
Well, I got to tell you, an awful lot of people don't understand that, Joe. We're getting a ton of mail on that subject. So I'm glad we're bringing it up.
Yeah, good. But it apparently, from what I understand anyway, this is not a part of the current bill that is being voted on. Okay, let me just go back to net neutrality for a second, which is... let me see. I had the article here. I just want to get to that if I can.
Eric Schneiderman has said he's going to sue.
Right.
And
he's
not alone.
17 other state attorneys general say that they will. Well, they called on him to delay the vote, and now they're threatening suit. The other thing I wanted to say is that.
So while you're doing that, when it gets up to the Supreme Court of the United States, gang, what do you think happens then? And that's why these Trump appointees and this latest Trump appointee who are going to go blindly wherever he wants them to will be with them. And they're going to say the FCC has the right to do this.
Of course the FCC has the right to do this. The issue, going back to Rich's point about antitrust and monopolies and oligopolies, is that this is a textbook case where you're going to see, with the consolidation in telecommunications over the past two decades, you're going to see higher overall prices, less choice, it's extremely anti-competitive, and for, you know, a bunch of Republicans who like to beat the drum of, you know, free market capitalism works. This is the exact opposite of free market capitalism. This is anti-competition.
But realistically, the question then goes, do we get saddled with it or not? And the answer is yes. Just because you know what's up, and we all do, that doesn't mean that it's going to be killed. It's not.
Oh, I know it's not going to be killed. I'm just trying to explain what's going to happen when it gets implemented.
Am I the only one whose cable bill did not go down during the 3 years of net neutrality? Because following your line of logic, that while we had net neutrality, there should have been open competition and bills should have gone down. I pay a lot of money to my cable company, and I watch like one channel. And I bet you could all guess what it is.
Fox News.
ESPN Golf.
Oh, my God. You got to switch around.
All right. The thing I wanted to say is that there's a line in this article from the Washington Post saying some analysts believe the uncertainty surrounding net neutrality provides an opening for congressional legislation to settle the issue once and for all. I don't see that happening. Do you?
Not now, but if there's a change in the midterms and people start, I mean, these companies are really smart. We're not all going to have our internet service slow down in a couple weeks. They're going to ease ease this in. They're going to ease in the increase in costs. And
after the holidays when we all get our new iPads?
If Congress flips in November, Congress might act, but I don't think this Congress will.
But the whole idea was to not have these companies be regulated as common carriers and not be subject to congressional regulation. That's how it always had been before, and that's what the proponents say spurred the innovation that took place.
So if you were on the FCC, you would have voted yes?
I would have voted yes. Okay. I would not have voted to extend governmental regulation to the internet, which only happened
in
2015.
Well, I am
as free
so
as we
surprised.
Can.
But even if that results in monopolies and higher prices?
I have other remedies for that, okay. Right? I have whether exercised or not governmentally, I have the Department of Justice, and I know what you're going to say.
Oh, please.
Hey, go tell CNN that the Department of Justice is not doing anything, okay?
And CNN only because Trump hates them. This is going to be very selective.
The timing couldn't be worse because we don't have a strong antitrust commitment in this current Department of Justice. So it's going to fall to the state attorneys general.
No, it won't, though. But who will really fall to is the big company who feels that they're being wronged. And like I say, if Google thinks that somebody is preferring Yahoo over Google or whoever it is, I feel real comfortable that Google's going to take action and probably in a way that's more effective than the public sector. So,
shoot.
Right. Yeah, Google, Facebook. I mean, the internet giants are going to probably start pooling their resources and litigating this.
Right. All right. Civil suits are going to handle
years.
This.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go to letters. We'll go to other topics. We have a lot to discuss. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We'll return to the conversation after this break. I wish you were here. Rich is choreographing us for our interpretive dance to the John Williams music.
It's not pretty.
You know, Joe, a lot of people say that net neutrality had not really caught on as a major subject with the public. But if you were to be reading the same mail that you and I are now, you would say, well, then WAMC's listenership is a hell of a lot different because I have never seen such a cascade of letters on any subject.
All right, let's get to a couple of them. Rich is a little off of his argument. In his argument, the loss of net neutrality will allow large internet companies to control competition. Netflix and other streaming services, who are now a direct threat to crappy and controlling cable packages.
The ones we have.
Would not have grown if Verizon and Time Warner could have stopped them. Rich said that he doesn't like to talk about something he hasn't read firsthand. However, he sure doesn't mind talking about net neutrality, a subject on which he seems to have a very tenuous grasp on the subject matter, most of which he's saying is wrong and demonstrates his naivete. I have to say, 5, 6, 7 years ago when this subject, we were talking to Rich about this on this program and the various pros and cons.
And I think my exact words were, this is really boring and really dry, but it's going to be really important and we all need to know what it is.
I agree. In fact, I learned much of what I know about net neutrality because of you and the articles that you have provided me. So thank you for that. Tom says price of the web goes up and there goes your $2,000 tax break because this tax bill will allow companies to raise prices all across the board. Well, that was the point we were making earlier about, you know, that there's other ways to gobble up this extra money that you're going to get. Mm-hmm. John says, why is one of your panel members blathering about cable companies? You do not get cable via the internet.
Well, cable companies provide multiple services, including internet.
Right. And yes, you do, right? Yeah, you do. You do.
So. You get a package. Right. It's internet, bad phone service, and cable.
And way too many channels.
James says the internet is not a utility like every other first world nations, like electricity, water, trash. The internet is privatized in the United States. Here is some homework for the panel. Roger says, could the panel please explain the public purpose served by allowing contributions to NPR stations, including WAMC, to be tax deductible? Since these stations are demonstrably left-wing, it seems unfair to provide this indirect tax subsidy to which conservatives are thereby contributing. If supporters were to provide after-tax dollars or the stations were to run advertisements, that would be fine. After all, conservative radio is supported by advertising alone. Alan, go.
Yes, Rich, you dirty...
Roger.
No, no, yeah. Rich. Yes, Rich, you dirty left-winger on our panel. That's sarcasm, folks. What about Herb London? Oh, yeah, he's another left-winger. Go away. Sorry.
All right. From...
You didn't get it? In other words...
No, I got it.
Yeah, we got it.
Yeah. Bruce says, these protections will end per FCC vote. Blocking. ISPs cannot discriminate against any lawful content by blocking websites or apps. Throttling. Yeah. ISPs cannot slow the transmission of data based on the nature of content, as long as it's legal. And paid prioritization. ISPs cannot create a fast lane for companies and consumers who pay premiums and a slow lane for those who don't. So that was what we were talking about earlier.
We're all taking Route 9W to New York City.
That's
right. It's going to be a long ride.
Yeah, and nothing stops the FCC from trying to promulgate, which is how this all started in the first place, was the FCC, under Obama's guy, to his credit, was trying to promulgate rules to stop exactly those practices without it coming under the umbrella of a common carrier. And it was the court decision that said, if you're going to do that, then you have to be a common carrier, that propelled the net neutrality discussion.
I think we just don't have any confidence that this majority FCC is going to step in and have consumer protections when things go off the rails.
Right. I agree with you, and we shouldn't. I think our confidence should be more in the private market, that we're going to have equal forces fighting each other and hopefully, which I think will actually spur competition, as well as the Schneidermans of the world.
But that'll take a while, right? When the giants start filing competing lawsuits, that's not going to be resolved.
I don't think it'll work like that at all. I think the giants will just start doing things. So, Google will say, if you're not going to carry this, then, we're not going to let you carry any of our stuff or something like that.
That'll be quicker than litigation.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's go to other topics. Again, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Please do not send to any other address, or we won't read your letter because we don't get it. So please write to panel at WAMC.org. Let's talk about Roy Moore for a second. Still not conceding. He announced yesterday that they're still looking for the vote to the military voting isn't in yet. Talking about possible recount 2 days after losing Alabama's special Senate election. Roy Moore has yet to concede the race to Democrat Doug Jones, even after White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said that he should. The President of the United States just this morning said that he should as well. I think the President's position is pretty clear in his outreach to Doug Jones directly. Moore, who suggested on election night that the race would go to a recount, said in a web video that late-counted ballots could change the results of the election. We have not received the final count to include military and provisional ballots. This has been a very close race, and we're waiting certification by the Secretary of State. He lost by 20,715 votes, currently not in a position to ask for a recount. The Alabama law does not trigger a recount unless the margin is between two candidates is less than 0.5%. And currently the margin is 1.5%. So you can't make somebody concede, but
Trump should call him. I mean, Trump called Doug Jones to try to get off on a good term with him, which was kind of hysterical. But Trump should call Roy Moore and say it's over.
By the way, I believe he called Doug Jones and Putin in the same afternoon. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. I mean, on one hand, I think the more Roy Moore is in the national spotlight, the better that is for the Democratic Party. But I think Roy Moore just has to go away. I mean, he's got to be in the dustpan of history and just go away. We don't want to hear from him anymore. And it's over.
You know, Judith, I may take a different view on this one. I think Roy Moore is a tremendous weapon for the Democrats.
Yeah.
But bad for our society. And if he goes away, they don't have that argument. I think that's why Trump, you may say he should have, somebody said, Joe or you, said he should have called Moore and told him to go away. But in fact, he did. The moment he welcomed them back and said a win is a win and the rest of it, he didn't want that on his back. He knew it. He knew he was bad for the Republicans. He knew he was bad for them. He may not have picked up the phone and called the guy, but he certainly made it clear that he knew that this was not good for his team.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens, and I assume that...
I will point out it was the Republicans who... did not vote him in, right? I mean, in a heavily Republican state, he was unable to win. I think the voters... ended up doing the right thing.
Well, wait. It was some Republicans. If you took a poll of whether the Republicans in that state still supported Roy Moore, you were going to find a huge yes on that. So the answer is it was some Republicans, and that's all you need in an election. You know, you got a 1% or 2% difference here. That's all it takes. But come on, Rich, it wasn't the Republicans who elected Jones.
It was a heavily Republican state, and the voters did the right thing. I think it was a triumph for, you know, it's kind of like...
Decency?
Humanity.
But it happens. It's
common
like
sense.
When you're in court and you have, like, a really complicated case, and the judge reads, like, 20 pages of instructions, and you walk out saying, how's anybody going to make sense of this? And then the jury just comes out with, like, some perfectly rational, correct decision. You're like, wow, that really worked. That's what happened here. This is how it's supposed to work. The guy should go away.
Tammy writes to us and says, in many places, there is only one cable company offered. I have only one cable service available in my location. There might be other choices as far as DirecTV or streaming services, but it seems many cable companies have had little competition, and now they will continue to be able to do whatever they want.
Where's he writing from, Joe?
You can read this.
I don't know.
No. Sometimes they tell you.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, in this case, I don't know. Christine says, this one has been Rich approved. Christine writes, let's end net neutrality in the grocery store so that Rich Honan can knock over single moms on his way to an express lane where the wealthy pay extra for good service. Seems very unfair. It's a funny letter, but it's very unfair. Yes.
Now, the question is, would you have a special cart to do that?
That's right.
You have to pay more at the door.
And you would have more than 10 items, I would say.
That is actually not true. I don't. That's the one rule. I don't violate the 10 item because I don't want the Hannaford police to be all over me.
That's
like
a
that.
Rough one.
Yeah. By the way, senior citizens violate that one at will. Okay.
Stop.
If we're going to talk about legislation, that's what we should be talking about.
I don't get it.
Yeah, of course
do
you don't.
Well, you know, first of all, that was very...
Forget the war on coal, a war on the express lane. Yeah.
By the way, I think, Rich, I thought that was very good calculation on your part of, how can I ostracize the small part of the population that I haven't ostracized yet? Sure. I'll go after the elderly. Good.
There we go. Listen, I am a senior citizen, okay? Just ask the AARP.
Rich gets points for encouraging the letter to be read.
You don't even know what senior means.
I don't even want to touch it. I'm afraid to respond to that one.
Aaron writes, perhaps the government should step in and regulate advertising costs in radio and TV, especially the outrageous Super Bowl advertising costs. I don't know that. Okay. All right. So let's move on to other stuff as well. Global warming and what we're going to get here. We look at the sort of the year in review of what has happened in our planet, and this report in the New York Times says you can't not say that this was caused by the warming of our of our planet.
2016 was the hottest year on record, and the article that Joe is referring to is a really interesting report that came out on climate attribution. So you've heard me say way too many times that you can't say that hurricanes are caused by climate change, but hurricanes are more intense when the water in the ocean and the sea are warmer. And just a quick update on Puerto Rico and U.S. Virgin Islands, it is still a terrible situation there. Majority of the people don't have electricity. There was an announcement yesterday that Puerto Rico won't have all of its electricity restored until May. So this has been a tremendous humanitarian crisis, and it's just the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, the tip of the melting iceberg. Yeah. So this report pointed to five things that scientists are saying is attributable to climate change. The obvious first one is high temperature and everything that goes along with that, especially from a health impact. The second is coral bleaching and the Great Barrier Reef. Droughts in Africa, wildfires in North, in California, Oregon, Western Canada. Again, climate change doesn't cause the wildfires, but the conditions, there's drought conditions, the wood is a lot warmer, so the fires are worse. And then problems off the coast of Alaska called the warm blob.
And the one thing you haven't mentioned are deaths.
Yes, many.
You saw the report, Judith. I know you're on top of this one, in Puerto Rico, where they had a defined number, and they said it's many times that of people who died as a result. The kid, I've said it a million times, the kid goes into a grocery store and spends 20 years in prison. And here is a president who is actively saying there's no such thing as climate change and refuses to take responsibility for the deaths that are occurring as a result of this.
Oh, yeah. CNN did a great investigation. No one believes that only 60 people died from the hurricane in Puerto Rico. And there's the issue of the after effect of the hurricane, living without electricity, for years. But when we look back at the Trump administration, which I hope is not 4 years, let's just look at the first year of the Trump administration.
Yeah.
I think his policies and the impact on climate change are just so devastating and dramatic, because we can't afford to lose a year or 2 years of progress. As we speak, the EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, by the way, is, I think, in Morocco promoting gas production products from the United States. Why the EPA Administrator would be traveling internationally to promote gas drilling, I don't know. But we are in a very bad spot on the climate change issue.
But Judith, if you say, okay, let's just assume that you're right, and I think you are, that it was many times the 60 who died in Puerto Rico. The New York Times has just done a huge story on this. How long do we put somebody in prison for one murder? And if you define what I think is going on here is that Donald Trump doesn't care about all the people who are dying as a result of this, compared to the one kid who goes to prison for the rest of their lives for a murder, which is not a good thing, of course. It's extraordinary that he is getting away with this. And I don't know how history or St. Peter is going to judge him.
Not well. Yeah, there's a phrase, climate justice. And if you're in Puerto Rico or the U.S. Virgin Islands and you can afford backup generators, or you can afford to hop on a plane and go stay with friends or relatives in Florida, you will survive Hurricane Maria and Irma. But if you're living in public housing, or you're a senior citizen who needs to refrigerate your medication and you don't have electricity, you do not survive these big storms. And we're going to be seeing more and more of these storms because of climate change.
So do you think we're past the point of no return? Like, even if there was a carbon tax implemented, is that enough to kind of at least mitigate some of these things, or is mitigation just not an option?
Something tells me we're going to be ending the show on a real bummer of a note, but go ahead.
Yeah. Happy Friday.
Happy holidays. Carbon emitted from a fossil fuel plant today stays in the environment for 10,000 years. So some scientists do believe we are beyond the point of averting catastrophic impacts.
Well, we already see it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it'll get worse if we don't dramatically change. It'll get much, much worse.
I know, and of course we're talking about the climate, we're talking about what we're doing, but also infrastructure is a huge part of this, especially when you're talking about places like Puerto Rico, Florida, so forth. And we're not doing anything on that either.
Right. I'm surprised this wasn't President Trump's first bill when he, you know, he's a developer, he's a builder, right out of the gate. Like President Obama's first bill was an infrastructure bill. And there's a lot that we can do to protect coastal communities and little islands like Manhattan, for instance, to fund resiliency. And none of that is happening. You know, we're going to pay. The question is, do taxpayers pay? Do the carbon polluters pay? Or are these investments not made? And then you see more deaths in places like Puerto Rico and Houston and where, you know, where the dramatic weather events continue to unfold.
We are out of time. My thanks to our panel. Alan, thank you very much. Have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll see you on Monday.
Okay, gang.
Judith, thank you very much. Always good to see you. We'll see you next Friday. Aaron, we'll see you not next Friday, no. But we'll see you in the new year.
Correct.
Excellent. I look forward to that. Rich, whenever I beg you, you'll get back to me at some point, and you'll be back on.
Absolutely.
All right. Maybe next week?
We'll see.
All right.
Careful. Careful of the shopping lane. I'm not going in the express lane in the supermarket.
Thanks to everybody. Thanks for writing in. We'll be back with more Roundtable after this.